guest host, Robert Stanley. Jamil is busy moving, and I hope everything's going well with her. And she has graciously asked me to guest host the show today. And we're very fortunate to have the last living shaman of the Wampanoag Nation with us today, my friend Don. Don, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us. So today we're going to discuss a little bit about, I think we should let people know something about your background, because I find it very, very interesting. It's one of the great blessings of my life to have met you when I moved out here to New England, where we are both living and having this discussion. So for people who are not familiar with the Wampanoag Nation, could you please give a little background on that?
Okay. My introduction to everything came about through my grandfather, and my grandfather was also a shaman. In fact, shamanism goes back through my family, and the earliest recorded one is through a friend of George Washington's. His name was Simeon Simon, and he married a Whedon, and it's through this that it became very evident. Shamanism is just the ability to change one's mind or state of being so that you can see things that you normally wouldn't see, and you can hear things that you wouldn't normally hear, and to be able to communicate. And what my grandfather had taught me was the ability to communicate to many different things on many different levels, and to find that all things are living. And through this, I've come to the realization that God, as we know God, and pretend that that we know God in this world today, is very obscure, is very meaningless. It's not something that is alive. Whereas even the greatness of people such as Christ and Gandhi and many others that were looming people, they lost not the message, but they lost the people's ability to differentiate between what their message was that they were to give versus what they themselves were. And people looked upon them as gods rather than the importance of the message that was being given. And a shaman, you directly contact with what I call a living, intelligent energy. And this energy is never been proven to be wrong in my whole life. Mm. Information that I've received from it has always been true and remains true.
Well, I guess and thank you for that. I guess what I was trying to get at is, for people who don't know about the history of New England, your nation, the Wampanoag Nation, formerly known as Pokanoket, were the primary people that the Pilgrims contacted and established a friendship with when they arrived at Plymouth. Isn't that true?
Yes, that is true. We had contact with what we call the Star People, and we knew for approximately 300 years before the landing at Plymouth of the white people, which also, on my mother's side, they came over on the first boatload on the Mayflower. We knew that they were coming. So this was all a part of an education in the grand scheme of things. The Star People have given me, for example, the name that I have. And Pokanoket, the name is not Osamequin, which is a corrupt guttularization that came over from Canada, of meaning yellow feather in their language. But it is Anskamekieng. Mm-hmm. So in Pokanoket, the meaning of the word Anskamekieng means feather, the color of light. Through a series of processes, starting 1948 to 1954, I went through training that was necessary for me to communicate with the greater Anskamekieng. And in doing so, I finally made contact, and it was only through the last year and a half or so that things have become very firm in understanding how, for example, the origin of life originated. But as to the Indian background that I have, it was instrumental.
All right. We had a little technical difficulty, but we're back, and we're with Don.
Yes, I'm here.
Who's explaining to us how you know, his knowledge of shamanism and also being the last Osamegwin of the Wampanoag Nation. So if you could resume where I know we got kind of disturbed there for a second, but what else can you tell us about the Osamegwin? I found it actually fascinating.
Okay. The Osamegwin was traced by my aunt, who was Princess Red Wing, and she was the only known Indian princess of the whole North American continent. There's no one else recognized by the United States government or has shown evidence that they have recognized of her. And the part that she had done was to be granted a doctorate's degree from the University of Rhode Island. And in it, she traced the travels of an unusual person. And this person was the one that was known under many names, but the one that I know him by is Anskami Kiang. Mm-hmm. And as I said, Anskami Kiang means the feather of light that is emitted from the head, which other shamans are able to see emitted through the head as I walk about doing the things that is necessary for me to do.
Mm-hmm.
The traveling that he had done, he always preached one thing among our tribe, which was very unusual in that period of time. He preached that he was the son of the living God.
Hmm.
And for that, we were going to stone him to death, put him to death. So what our elders said, well, we're going to have to follow him and watch him and see everything that he does.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, but we never found any fault. He never showed signs of being egotistical. He never did things that were not of the highest order of being human. And each night he would go back, and where the Mount Hope Bridge is today in Bristol, Rhode Island, there's a little hole there as you go from the mainland to the island of Aquinnah, which we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where his big canoe, is, as you would put it, rested on the on and about the waters. And he would walk on the waters out to it, go into the light and disappear there, and then come back out and resume his next daily things that he needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But he always spoke of doing what today is generally conceived as the greatest good. He always sought the peaceful way of answers.
Mm.
He could heal plants, animals, and indeed he could heal people. But his primary purpose, you could tell, was not really in the physical healing, but rather about him there was an aura of light that was so strong and powerful that people wanted to come to him just to be with him.
Mm.
It was so perfect and healing that they didn't speak, they didn't talk, they didn't cause any upset or anything like that. Just they longed to have the healing presence that he brought to them. And all their life's problems could be more clearly seen through the light that he admitted through his body. And he said it was never his body
mm-hmm.
that this light came from, but rather it was from his father that resided in the openness that was above in the sky, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So this person was the original Anskami Kiang, did many different things. He's the one that taught us the meaning of the word Pokanoket that was given to us by the star people, and it means the garden that was seen from on high. We had an unusual way of planting, and when we planted beans, squash, and corn together with a fish put into the middle of it, we did it using the five fingers because we use what is we call the five-star method of healing,
mm-hmm.
and we still use that in everything that we do in our life. If we wish to live the old ways, must be comprised of five things. In this world of duality, usually things are either a yes, no, good, bad, left, right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in our reality, we're taught to see things from at least five different perspectives. And until you see things in five perspectives, you shouldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You should watch, observe, and know what is taking place. It's similar to the Christian attitude of stand still and see the glory of God.
Mm-hmm.
Because many times, while you're waiting to get more viewpoints, the problem is resolved before your eyes. but you are in an open, clear state of mind so that you can see and feel and understand what is taking place and the resolvement of any issues that are taking place. And this way, you have a chance to learn from the Great Spirit, from the Great Creator. You have the ability to understand what truth itself is. And truth is nothing more than beauty. It is indivisible light. And it's light that is not only nourishing and entertaining even, it has a sense of humor. And that's why I refer to it as an intelligent living energy. This is what I prefer to think of God as, because the word God, as it's used, connotates many different things for many different people. Mm-hmm. And some believe it's dead and so on and so forth. And they're entitled to that opinion. But they're about to find out very shortly that indeed there is a God. This God has been allowing complete free will of humans for quite some period of time. And now a gentle nudging, so to speak, is about to take place as we enter a different quadrant of the universe right now.
Mm-hmm. So the Omskamikian that we might call a Christ-like person that came to the Pokanoket people, you're the Wampanoag, now what we might call the Wampanoag Nation that was here in New England, he called himself an emissary, or clearly was a son of the Father from heaven, and he taught many things, and he was a healer. But now he also, if I recall you telling me this correctly, was he imparted some information that was to be preserved, and this is part of why the line of Omskamikian, which you're part of, is to not only certain technique of healing and teaching, but also there's a certain information. If you're comfortable with, maybe you could at least give people, since I think you're alluding to it right now, there's a certain important pieces of information that were given only to certain individuals to be passed along this line of Omskamikian into the future. Isn't that true?
Yes, that's true. We had basically three mountains, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
One was Mount Monadnock, where we sought out the spirituality of all things, and that to us was the mountain of the living God, or living energy of God.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Mount Wachusett that we went to seek the energy from the earth that would help us in the governance of our people. And then for the everyday life of how to do things, where the clans would meet, would be in Potomac. And that was a mountain, but 76 feet has been chopped off for it by the military for a Nike site that was placed there. But that was put in a direct line, all three, and all three came from the same type of igneous quartz rock that came down from an earth fissure between the plates between North America and of Africa.
Hmm.
And it went under the sea and then came up in Mount Hope, then up again in Mount Wachusett, and then up again at Mount Monadnock, and from there it went straight down to the center of the earth. So the energies of each three spots being exposed would help us to find the answers that we were seeking for. And mm-hmm. Omskamikian taught us that those three were very important places, because even today, if you put your mind based upon God, mm-hmm. upon truth, upon beauty, upon the most noble thing that you can think of, you will receive type of feelings, so to speak, that will permeate your whole body.
Hmm.
And when you leave there, you leave completely refreshed, energized, and a sense of knowing what needs to be done in an order becomes natural when you follow the way of nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he was explaining, basically, is to follow what nature has. Everything that is the disease of man comes from man's ego. Ego is that which would dare to think it is other than the Great Spirit, or the great living energy that I've been talking about.
Mm. And it just so people can visualize this, these mountains progress, these three sacred mountains progressively get larger as you go from south to north. The one, it's in Bristol, that you spoke about, Mount Hope. It's very small, but it's very powerful. I've been to all three of these locations, but of the three, that one really got my attention the most, possibly because of the information you gave me. But I was deeply moved by it. It's also mostly quartz crystal, which I thought found very fascinating. So that one is in the south in Bristol. Then you move up to the Wachusett's, is much taller, and that's to the north in Massachusetts. And then just beyond that is what's the other one? Monadnock. And that one I found very powerful also. I mean, they're all three very powerful, but I'm just saying, so for people to visualize, it's they run from north to south, and they gradually get larger as you go to the north.
Yes, and they're sort of like, I hate to use the word vortex because I don't know what other people mean when they say vortex, but I do know the energy centers are extremely strong at Pawtucket, where Mount Hope is. There's a place there that was made by the lightning of no sound of the Star people. And this was a hallowed sea, and it's referred to often as King Philip's chair, as the throne, so to speak, and we often use the word throne, whether it's any of the Massasoits, including King Philip or whoever may have been living at that period of time.
You need to explain this term. What is a Massasoit?
Oh, a Massasoit in our time and our way of governance is at the top, and he is a leader that controls four people. The four people that report to him are Sagamores. The Sagamores live among the people of Poconoket. And I prefer Poconoket rather than Wampanoag because Wampanoag is actually a Delaware word that means the people of the early light. And it doesn't mean the people of the first light. There's no oddness to it. It gave their direction according to where they were living at the time, which was Delaware, from which they were forcibly removed from.
Mm.
But the Poconoket had the energy from that throne from the Star people always helped and given the everyday instructions that were needed from that. The second place of power that is on the south side of the very top of Mount Wachusett, and that's where a council of war for approximately 6 months was held. And the war drums could be heard from there down into the greater Pawtucket, which really was the founding of what today is Boston. The drums at night could be heard all that great distance. And for over a half a year, a determination was made whether we'd go to war or not. And unfortunately, King Philip took the wrong path. He was not supposed to take the path to war. He was supposed to take the path of peace, as Anscombe Meekyang would have suggested if he were there. But unfortunately, he listened to some hotheads, and the result was he did something that he should not have done.
Let's just hold it for just 1 second, because I want this timeline to be clear for the audience. When the pilgrims first landed, they met a representative who was the great leader at the time, a Massasoit, who was also an Anscombe Meekyang. Isn't that true?
Yes,
And he's the one that decided to help the pilgrims to become part of, I mean, basically welcome them in to your nation. And so there was a time of peace prior to the war. Now, King Philip, or Metacomet?
Yes.
Yeah, he was a son of the Massasoit that befriended the pilgrims.
Yes, that's
true. He was the second son. He was the first son was designated to take over from the father, but he was poisoned, I believe you told me.
Yes, according to our family history, he was definitely poisoned.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know, the thing about the first son of the Massasoit, was he an Anscombe Meekyang?
No, he wasn't.
Okay.
He was a Pinesi warrior, which is something that's talked about by other people, but it's something that's not clearly understood by any, unless they are one.
Yeah, it's
three tests that have to be done, and that's worthy of another talk show.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I don't think we. I don't want to deviate too far from, because I think this is a lot of information we're imparting. And by the way, Don, thank you for doing this. I know you've been hesitant to let me. I know I've invited you on different talk shows to be with me to because I really think the history of the Pokanoket people is fascinating, and it's part of the American experience. And I have prayed to God that we could have this discussion so people would know more and realize the richness of the history of the Native people here, instead of just equating it with Thanksgiving. Although that's a beautiful ritual, to give thanks to God for everything, not just food, because that's another thing that you and I discussed. But
yes, I feel the same way very much, Robin. In fact, I'm very distraught, actually, over the fact that the greatness of Roger Williams is not really known to most people.
Yes.
He had bought the Royal House of Pokanoket as slaves, not indentured servants, but as slaves. And he bought that us to save us. And when we were sought upon by the Puritans, not the Pilgrims, but the Puritans of Massachusetts for destruction, we were sent over to Newport, and from Newport they sent it over to Jamestown Island, and that's where my last name, Whedon, W-E-D-E-N, this came from, and it's found in the first proprietary book. But the fact that a person that is adamantly against slavery would actually turn around and buy people as slaves to save their lives speaks tremendously of the faith in God that this one called Roger Williams had.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't find that in too many books, and yet there are many, many areas with primary documentation written at his time
that
confirm this.
And just to help people, so that we can put this into context, what we were describing is the Pilgrims landed, they became friends, and basically their lives were saved by your ancestors, the Massasoit, who was leading the Pokanoket Nation of that time. They took them in, showed them how to survive in this environment, and ultimately, you know, there was a friendship. But things deteriorated, as you say, when the Puritans showed up, and the Massasoit passed away. His son was murdered.
As soon as he passed away, that was the time. Then, for 40 years prior to that, not one of the 12-point treaty was ever broken by either side, by any white man, and no other tribe can turn around and say the same thing, and no other period of time had 40 years of peaceful living between white people and Native Americans had ever occurred.
Mm. So when Metacomet became the Massasoit, there was an effort. You described it to me. There was an effort to talk some sense, make him see reason with him among the Pokanoket people. However, there was Puritans that were also filling his head full of nonsense that basically tricked him into going to war, which ultimately ended very badly for the Pokanoket Nation.
Yes, it ended just as it was prophesied.
Mm-hmm.
And it was justly so, because if you do believe and the way of life that you have, you're more than willing to turn around and, I hate to use the word sacrifice your life, because life, as I know it, is never and never can be ending with a death. We are already immortal.
Hmm.
It's just the knowledge is not firmly placed within our mind to draw upon that strength. But the only thing that does die is the body. Mind, our soul, is attached to the body in the same way that a shadow is attached to a body.
Mm-hmm.
It's not part of the body, yet it exists and goes along with the body.
Right. Well, again, I want to just kind of run the timeline through here. So after King Philip became the leader, he decided to take everybody to war. He also tried to get other tribes, surrounding tribes, to join in, with him to try and push. I mean, it was a silly idea, but anyway, he ended up trying to push the Europeans out of New England, and ultimately he lost. The Pokanoket people, their nation, was decimated, and your language, your religion, was all outlawed. You were not allowed to own land or any possessions again, basically. And that's where Roger Williams stepped in to save what was left of the Pokanoket people by entering you into an agreement, so everybody understands. He did this because, as he explained to your ancestors, these people who want to kill you legally cannot do so, because if you're my property, they cannot do that. There'll be a penalty against them if they...
Yeah, they would have to pay for each head that they represented.
Right. So he was very clever about it. He didn't agree with slavery, but that's not the reason he basically invited you to agree, your ancestors to agree to this slavery on paper, but he didn't treat you like slaves.
No,
right?
Actually, he absolutely not.
Yeah.
In fact, he did everything he could to get the another group that were there that became later friends and then became known as Quakers. He asked them to shelter us and to hide us, which they did during the course of the King Philip Wars. A lot of our people and the greatest part of our nation had been survived through that. And Roger Williams, by the way, had gone to the King of England and was trying to receive an audience with the King of England to protest against the damaging effect that the Pilgrims of the colony of Massachusetts were doing. They already caused a preemptive strike and destroying and completely the Pequots in the colony of Connecticut without ever telling the colony of Rhode Island that we're sending troops across their borders or letting the people of Connecticut know that their lives were in danger, because if any of them escaped, they would try to retaliate against any white people.
Right. So I just want everybody in the audience to know this is not... this is not a judgment, what we're talking about here. This is not all we're trying to do here on this show is what I've wanted to do for years with Don, was to explain the actual history, because I think a lot of it has either been lost or distorted over time, and I hope everyone recognizes that this is a real treat. This is actually a blessing to have this information. I see it as a very good sign that we're actually talking about this now openly. And I know, Don, I really, it's one of the great, great blessings in my life to meet you and become friends with you. But the fact that you would entrust with me the information about the true history of your people has been phenomenal. It's really wonderful to actually be able to discuss this with you in public. Now, I would like to know, though, when the first pilgrims showed up, that particular Massasoit was also an Onskamekian, or a disciple of the greater Onskamekian. He's like a disciple of this Christ-like person that came here from either heaven or the stars or whatever.
Right, he was a Massasoit. He was the leader of the people.
Okay, so who did he pass on? Was there a period where there was no Onskamekian after he passed away?
Has been slight periods of time when there wasn't, and the tribe, or those that had remained of the tribe, and especially of our family, that's been very instrumental in keeping the awareness of what our people were and what people are. Yes, that was happening to a greater extent than as not that they were not always there. The last one before me was in the early 1900s from a person that had lived in a town called Rice City, Rhode Island.
But the information, it somehow has continued up until yourself, and now at this point you really, and you told me there isn't anyone within the Pokanoket, what's left of Pokanoket Nation, for you to impart this, or let's say to recognize as the next Onskamekian.
Yeah, well, it's even greater than that. The greater Onskamekian, of which I communicate with, much as people would consider channeling today, but I don't know what channeling is because I don't do it, but I've heard tell that people say I'm channeling this information or this state of being.
Right.
But the information is given to me, and there is really no one that has genetic material, not even my children, that I can pass this information on to, because they're into a different world right now, and rightfully so. Our time has come, our time is gone. I was chosen to be the last one in 1948, and that's great. I mean, I'm thrilled that I was chosen the last. There's no sorrow or anything upon my part. I know I've been in direct communication with my grandfather from the day that he had died. There isn't a day that I cannot communicate with him. I don't wish to, because he has his continuation of life, and I have my continuation of life. He can't help me in the sense of telling me what to do, because that infringes upon a person's free will, and I can't tell him what to do either.
Yeah, right. Right. So, you know, I guess one of the reasons that you and I are such close friends with in a short time was because of our affinity to the Creator, our Father. I do think that what Native Americans have always maintained is that we're all related. I believe that in my heart because of what I've experienced. And so even though maybe genetically we're not related, I think spiritually you already know, and most people would agree, that we are all related. And the information that you were given to preserve and to honor and to share only with those who would appreciate it is a great responsibility, in my opinion. So again, I think it's a great honor to be your friend, and also for you to entrust this information with me. But because I, as a journalist, I always felt that I don't want to see this information just simply evaporate. If and when you pass away, I think that would be a tragedy for the people that are here, still here on this planet Earth. It's important, so I appreciate you being willing to open up. I know we've talked about this before, and it hasn't happened up until today. So this is a very special event, in my opinion. And I say this because there's an event that's coming, or a series of events that's going to occur, starting with October 28th of this month. There's going to be.
Yes, I'm very much looking forward to that.
Well, they some people say it's the end of the Mayan calendar, recently I asked my father, who is in heaven, I don't know how else to say this, he's somebody that I got to meet quite unexpectedly face to face in 1985, after a meditation when I ascended into the light. To a place that I would simply call heaven, because I don't know what else to call it, but it was extremely bright, and I met this individual, and who was extremely radiant, bright individual person, man. And I asked him, "Who are you?" And he said, "I'm your father." Okay, so that for me was it was quite an awakening, and I've kept in touch with this individual, and he may be God, I don't know. He didn't say that. He may be Christ. He didn't say that either. All he said he was my father. But I do think the way you describe the Omskamekian, the way people describe Christ and other avatars, is that, you know, they have this radiant, loving light, very intelligent, and very compassionate about the way that they nurture life here on this world and probably others. So yeah. The point I'm trying to make is, when I was looking at these dates, these alignments, astronomical alignments, energy, consciousness, shifting, and I asked the Father, my Father in heaven, I said, you know, what can we do? And he described to me, those of us who are awake, we could shine our soul's light onto dark spots or dark, you know, areas of this earth. And so I loosely call this the Soul Light Project. And anybody that's gone to the Alchemy of Light website, Jamil sent out a flyer about, you know, the shows and stuff. There's a link there for that particular project. I'm asking or inviting people to shine their soul's light. Visualize your soul's light shining down from heaven into three locations, and that would be Washington, D.C., London, and Rome, because these areas are the strongholds, I call them the fortresses of darkness on this world right now. And so I believe that this is an opportunity for us to participate in an exercise of group alchemy, where we take our light and literally transmute the darkness here on this world, using our soul energy, consciousness, or light. And then on November 11th, 11-11-11 this year, I'm also inviting people to do this together, the same projection of soul light to the core, to the center of the star, what we call the sun, and the earth, and the moon, that trinity of life, that web, that matrix of life that we all enjoy here. needs our help. A little bit of just a little assistance from us will actually go a long way. As that energy penetrates to the core, it will then radiate back out, and those spheres are intelligent living things. And yep, they will know what to do. They'll know what to do. Sorry, I'm going on about it. But I'm just trying to explain. They'll know what to do. They will take that energy and use it to help us in return and all other life within this web to evolve more quickly and more peacefully as we transition to a higher state of being.
And what you're doing, Robert, is something that's very important. You're giving them permission, and I'm referring to Our Father, the Son, Our Mother, the Earth, and the Big Brother, the Moon, you're giving them permission to use their energy to exert in such a way as to bring about good or the greatest good here upon the Earth. Mm-hmm. And if anyone thinks that the Moon isn't alive, all they need to think about is that why are women, for example, their hormones and structure and everything like that related to the Moon?
Right.
The energy of the moon, the full moon to the new moon. Why is life itself respond so much fully to the moons? Why do the plants and everything obey what the moon does? So everything that is, that we have a name for, has a center. And if everything has a center by principle, by geometry, you can turn around and say, has a conscience.
And true enough.
You can reach the consciousness of the our Mother, the Earth, and our Father, the Sun, and our Big Brother, the Moon. That's not just an Indian way. It is the way of the universe, period.
Yes, it's the correct way, regardless of what you call it. And I said this is not just an exercise. This is an actual event. This is something that we will learn a lot from, in a sense that it's experiential. We'll actually grow from this experience of using this, our soul's light, to actually affect a change for the positive. Now, this isn't just a group meditation. This is truly focusing our intention, calling down our soul's energy consciousness to actually help transmute the lower vibration to a higher vibration. And although there are good beings, extra-dimensional, extraterrestrial beings that are here, maybe angelic you want to call them, that are trying to help us and are doing their best they can for us, it's important for us to at least make some effort, too. Those of us who are awake, it's incumbent upon us to actually put some effort into assisting ourselves and our fellow man. Because, as I say, I'm actually positive, 100% positive, we are all related. And we do need to work together at some level to assist each other through this transition.
Yes, it's a sign to them that we are worthy of not becoming exterminated, but we are worthy to continue on with life and to be in a form of life that can communicate with them. They haven't been holding their communication back to us, but rather we have shut our listening and our ability to communicate with them.
Well, absolutely, and because it is reciprocal, and communication has to be two-way. And here's the other thing that was described to me about okay, so I've also said, as I say, in ancient alchemy, what they would do is they take a lower vibratory metal like lead, and they would expose it to the higher frequencies of light, concentrated light, and that would then raise the vibration of the lead up to silver or gold. Well, we can do the same thing here with these very low vibrational centers of Washington, D.C., London, and Rome. And we should see a result from this if we do this correctly. And as far as the sun, the earth, and the moon, it's just like, okay, I'll explain it this way. Our bodies, the cities, our planet, and the stars, the sun, all take in energy. In order to be a living thing, you have to take in energy as well as radiate the energy back out. This is what life is. It is a constant communication. Yeah, it's a flow. That's a ebb and flow of life and energy and information and light. So recognizing that, we can now go ahead and participate on a much more conscious level that, you know, because once we do this, we will continue to do this in even greater capacities, in my estimation.
Yes.
And that is how we will evolve. I mean, you know, I mean, you can't just read about this. You can't hypothesize about it. You need to experience it. I think it pales in comparison. In other words, when I talk about standing in front of the glory of the Father and feeling His love radiating literally through my core of my being, I can tell you about it, but until you're standing there yourself, you won't know it. You won't know what I'm talking about. So, and I honestly believe that everybody will have that opportunity if they so desire. I must say, though, in my life, the only reason, that I, as far as I can tell, that I was compelled to actually stand with the Father is because I had seen the dark side. I'd experienced it earlier that day, and I actually intervened on behalf of a young boy and his family. They were being tormented by, I don't know how to say this, but like a demon had actually possessed this child. And although I didn't know it at the time, my instinct was to intervene to try and help. I mean, at the very moment when this all, it was actually a matter of life or death. And all I did was basically pick up the phone and say, you know, make sure that the paramedics were going to come and save this boy, otherwise he would have bled to death. But it was more than that. It went deeper than that. And that night, when I meditated on top of the mountain, I stood between the sun and the moon, literally, a full moon and the sun. And as I sat there and I meditated for hours, it was after that is when I ascended into the light and actually got to have an audience with the Father. And that was just the beginning. It wasn't the end, hardly. That was the beginning of my a new awakening, a new understanding of life and my role in it, which is simply to help, to try and do my best to help everyone to evolve. I'm not going to force anybody. I'm just trying to help them.
And you, by this program, you're actually doing that in a big way.
Well, thanks,
because
Tom.
There will be people that will be listening, and in their heart, if it's not prepared for the seed that's been given to them right now, the soil is being prepared so that a seed can drop, and it's up to them at that particular point and moment in time. And I believe that they will. I foresee the future in a lot of different ways. And one of the things that I do know is that when the division of the earth does occur, there'll be a tremendous amount of joy, absolute ecstatic joy, and instead of fear. And the goodness of what the Creator has been doing will become evident, because there will be in direct communication. There'll be no need of a priesthood. There'll be no need of anyone as an intermediary between you and God.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there is a living Christ. And yes, I know what the living consciousness of Christ is. And I'm amazed at the power of the light that this one that is known as Jesus the Christ exhibits throughout many universes.
Mm-hmm.
He is known beyond just this little world right here, because of what he had done upon this little planet, Earth.
Yeah, which has got a big problem, and that is the fallen ones that are here. And I don't want to dwell on this, but I just want people to realize that this exercise, this group alchemy that I've invited people to participate in, it really wasn't my idea. It was just I had asked a question of the Father, what can we do? And this was his answer, you should invite people to participate together at this time to do this deed. And it is really to help rid the earth of the dark souls that inhabit it right now and have been tormenting not only all the different life forms but on this earth, but polluting the earth and actually harming the earth so that it cannot evolve to its full potential, which you briefly mentioned it. I think you've kind of... I would like you to elaborate when you said that there was going to be a dividing.
Yes, it's much like an amoeba. When amoeba gets ready to divide, there's a sorting out of everyone. Well, right now, similar to what it says within the Bible, everyone has been accounted for.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has been numbered. The number is absolute complete. And these people are under the absolute guidance, protection of as many angels as it would take to be protected.
Mm-hmm.
However, those that are not, they will not survive. But it is their choice. They'll have another few million years to go around on a grand cycle, and you know, catch up to where we were at this point in time, if they so choose.
Yeah.
But the Creator does not force his will, and Christ will not force his will upon anyone.
Right.
The ability to enjoy life and to be with others who enjoy life without bringing harm to anyone is one of the most important things that a person can do within their life while they're here upon this earth, is to make sure whatever they do not intentionally bring harm to another life form.
Well, and that's what I found so disturbing about that event that I experienced back in 1985 when I was living in Malibu. When I stepped in to help the family, I mean, it was just a reflex. I just went over and helped them to make sure the boy wasn't going to die. When I was there, I actually felt an entity in the room, and it touched me. And again, words really kind of pale when you, unless you've been touched by one of those entities or know someone who has. Just calling it a demon is very insufficient to describe the feeling, the emotion, because they feed off of our negative energy. Whenever we're angry or fearful or, you know, greed, these are emotions that they really want to generate within us, and so that they can actually gain some dark energy from us. Sort of like, I mean, like milking a cow. I hate to, that's not a really good analogy, but they know how to provoke us in ways that is completely covert, very subtle, but it has a profound effect on us and everybody around us, so that we go into this negative energy, and that keeps them strong.
That's where I feel this event that's forthcoming, both events, are in the right chronological order, such that one adds to the other. And what it amounts to is that we are asking for help for an exorcism of this earth from that and those life forms that do not belong here and must be removed to a safe place. And this right now is actually being done, though we're unaware of it. But we will become aware of them, as some of them are going to fight in the last moment. We'd rather see destruction come upon them. In fact, for everybody.
Yes.
But that is not going to be allowed.
Good.
So this, good. I hope the word exorcism turns out to be a good word for it. But it
correct.
Is in the sense, because if you think of an exorcism of a single or a group of demons that are inhabiting just one human being,
right.
Well, we are taking care of our planet, the Earth, so that an exorcism happens where they can't stay. And that amoeba that divides, one is lighter than what the other one is. The end result is, when that division takes part, one in a family may have three or four brothers and three or four sisters, and half of them may go upon one planet, so to speak, that's very fine and light and ethereal, and the other one will stay with the other one behind. And it's because of already being not judged, but because they've been found unworthy. They're incapable physically of doing that. Just as my children are incapable of doing the work of a shaman, and which is no problem.
Right.
But they have a right to do what they're doing. They're doing things. And that God, regardless, or the living energy, can never be defeated.
Right.
His will be done. And there's nothing that can stop his will being done. We are just aligning ourselves in such a position that we can take the glory of God and shed it in areas that are desperate for its light.
Yeah, I agree. For people who are interested in what we're talking about, specifically this particular project, the Soul Light Project, you can Google it. It's only one L, Soul Light. For some reason, that's the way I spelled it. Or you can go to unicusmagazine.com and click. There's a banner at the top that says Know Thyself. And if you go there, it'll say the Soul Light Project, among other things. There's a lot of good free information that really helps in spiritual evolution. And you're more than welcome to do that. And if you would have any interest in contacting myself, or if you're looking to contact Don, there's an email link at unicusmagazine.com. That's spelled UNICUS magazine.com. Or you can just write to editor@unicusmagazine.com, and I will certainly get back in touch with you and try to help any way I can. I think we're running up against the top of the hour here, according to this clock. We have a few more minutes, so Don, I'm going to let you wrap it up. Any other thoughts that you'd like to share with us in closing?
Yes, I've been given information to write, and I've just completed a a second book, and it's on the origin of life, the origin of God, how God created God according to God. And in it, it's amazing that a child can possibly read this and understand it better than what a grown-up will, because it takes the mind of a child to see the simplicity of how God created himself out of a universe of nothingness, of emptiness, that through just one word, principle, that everything has a center. And a center was created out of a null and void universe. And eventually that the evolution of that is explained within this book to the point of where we know we're our consciousness. We know that we are living in the mind of God. And we know that there is such a thing as an intelligent living energy.
And what is the name of your book that you're working on?
Well, it's changed its name four or five times. It may change again before I get it published. But basically, its origin. It concerns everything about the origin of consciousness and the origin of everything, of the universe. As everything is energy, it refers to everything in the terms of what energy is.
And you think that'll be out next year, right?
I believe so.
I certainly hope so.
I'm working for this year if I can get it, but what I've been doing is receiving new information to simplify what I've written. So it's a learning task upon my part. If anything it should be holding it up, it would be me.
Well, no, I understand that process. Having written two books myself, it's not done till it's done, no matter what you think what the timeline is. It has a life of its own. It's almost like giving birth mentally. It just keeps gestating in your mind and your heart, and when it's ready, it's ready, and not a minute sooner, not a minute later. But whatever I can do to help you get that information out, I'd certainly be more than happy to do so. I think we only have a couple more minutes here. I'm counting it down. It's been a while since I've hosted a show, but I certainly would like to say hello to Jamil and thank you again for allowing me to guest host for you tonight or today, this afternoon. And I hope that the move is going well for you there. For people who are listening to this show today, I hope you recognize what a truly unique gift this was that we were able to receive from Don and from the Pokanoket people. And it's been my pleasure to speak with you publicly, Don. As you know, I'm very fond of you, and I really appreciate everything that you've shared with me, and now today sharing it publicly. That's a big thing in my book.
Well, I think it is also only in this sense, not because of the power of me, but rather it's similar to what is written in the Bible, where it says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God." I've noticed that when I've had good thoughts and I've expressed them, regardless of the circumstances or environment or the acceptance of the people or non-acceptance of the people, I took time and the courage to express the thought, I've noticed that it has taken place and has come to fruition in many places. I've been blessed in that sense of being shown that, not through any greatness upon myself, but rather it's when I'm without ego. It's like when I give a public talk many times, I'm standing outside of myself, looking at myself, and listening to myself talking.
Well, I certainly appreciate you coming on the show today with me and opening up the rich history of the Pokanoket people here in New England. And hopefully this won't be the last time we have a discussion like this. I do appreciate you helping with the Soul Light project too. It's given me a lot of strength and comfort knowing that you're on board with this.
Well, I'm very thankful to have an opportunity to speak, and I hope that the truth and the beauty of the things that you have brought forth will have a continuation of this show, and that perhaps you could be invited back again with another person to talk to. Because it's something that is much needed, very much needed.
Yeah, I think everybody needs to help each other through this transition. There's going to be a lot of turbulence before we hit the smooth patch. But these are exciting times. These are actually very transformational, magical times that we're living through. and I do thank God to be alive at this time. So I don't know if Doug is listening. Hopefully he's still producer is listening, but according to my clock, I think we've hit the top of the hour. So at this point, I think I will be signing off.
You actually have hit the top of the hour, but there's no show afterwards, so that'll allow you to continue as long as you'd like.
Really?
Yeah, for up to an hour.
Oh!
Okay. Well, if you're serious about it, then I will certainly take you up on it.
Oh, okay. There's one thing I
go ahead.
Don't know if I had told you about. The last occurrence when I made contact with, I just call a contact, was in the Pearl Woods. If I had told you about what had taken place there.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. What had taken place was that I felt the need to be alone and to be able to meditate out in the woods, someplace where it's quiet, without traffic, without the noise of the honking of horns or anything else to remind me that I'm in this world. And I found the place and went to it. I found the place very mystically to my wife, whose friend turned around and said, "Oh, I know the place. It's right down the road from here. Take a ride here, and you'll see a camping ground that you should go to." Mm-hmm. So I went to Pearl Pond, and full expectation that I was making contact. And I didn't know what life form, but I knew there was a life form that was seeking me out, that was waiting for a place and opportunity. So I went there, and the first night, I had a chorus of owls, screech owls, like you wouldn't believe. Mm-hmm. And they're my ally, so I knew that, having so many screech owls, that there must be someone really important that I'm going to meet, that, you know, it's a sign of power upon that person, not upon me. So I went to bed, woke up the morning, ate, and then the power became that much stronger. And then the second night I went, and it rained and so forth, and still knowing that there is something that's basically been watching me and listening, and I went through the normal routines that I go through. Well, on the third night, it made contact with me. I went to sleep. I knew that whatever it was would wake me up and would happen. And suddenly I feel something drag me out of the tent. And the only thing I could think of is there's a bear that was in the area that could have come down and it's decided to wake me up. So I kick it away with my other hand and, grabs a hold of me and starts pulling me again. So I finally turn around and I cuff at it, and as I pick my hand up and put my hand down, I feel what would have been the shoulder of a bear, but it was just a shoulder. And at the same instant that I'm touching this shoulder, something with a hand exactly as mine, with the same pressure of the fingers, grabs my shoulder. So I play my fingers like a piano, and it does the very same thing. I take my hand off it. It takes its hands off it. I put my hand on back quick and play the game like tapping. And it's doing exactly in the same rhythm. And finally I said, "Okay, I guess you're not a bear, so you can stay here. And I guess you're supposed to be what I'm making contact with." And then a type of a immersion took place where all sorts of information was given to me so rapidly that I imagine it'll take me years to decipher everything that's in it to its full understanding, rather than knowledge. Of course, I refer to as knowledge as one of the most horrible things a human being can try to store, because it's always temporal. Knowledge always changes with time. That's what I mean by temporal. So I turn around and tell this living creature that, okay, let's sit down, let's have a talk. So we sit down and we have a discussion about the things that are about to take place here upon the earth and the changes within the earth. And then the realization little by little comes to me that I'm talking to my greater self. But I'm thinking, no, contact is supposed to have been with the great spirit. It's not supposed to be to my greater self. It's supposed to... And then it dawns upon me, I am. I am that I am. I am the great spirit. I've just turned from, it's like, look, instead of looking into the light, I've turned my back to the light. So I turn my light toward the light of this creature, which turns its light toward me, and we become as one. And in the becoming as one, there was no body. We're just one ball of coalescent light, is the way I could describe it.
Uh-huh.
And the joy, the happiness, the completeness was so overwhelming that you couldn't cry. There was no sound that could be made outside of a vibration that came from my very soul.
Mm.
And the thread of light went from me to the tree, to the next tree, to the owls that were out there, the interconnectivity. And as each one was touched by this light, that light would go from the tree to me back. It'd be pulsing. So the connectivity of the oneness of all things here upon the earth and the earth itself was experienced. And it was the greatest experience I've ever had within my life. I've never heard of anything like this. I've seen things similar to it, whereas you can look at a tree in a particular way and you can see globes of light
mm-hmm.
descending in a particular order at a particular branch. And then after a little while, it's like the tree breathes and they go back out again. They're little, to me, they're golds of light. To some people, they're silver. When I'm showing people what it is, they'll see it in whatever color their body is designed to see it as. But the same branch always has the same number of molecules of this light that are seen entering and then exiting from it. But I've never seen the connectivity in the sense that what I am communicates to the tree, and the tree comes back, communicates to me. And not right. just the one owl. It glowed, made the whole area there absolutely glow.
Wow. So that would truly be self-realization, is what you experienced there.
Yeah, if there's a name that can be put to it, I guess it's that, because I've never had it happen before. Not to the extent that it did happen where the oneness became total.
Well, and this is why on the ancient mystery schools at the top of the threshold, when you would enter those universities of higher learning, it always said, know thyself.
Oh, to thine own self be true. My father gave me that expression. It was written by a Greek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I recently had a very unusual lucid dream where I was at someone's home. I don't know who it was, but I was with my son, and I was showing him in the study there was these books, and I opened one up, and there was pictures of spaceships, and clearly not from this world. And I was looking at the picture, and I said to him, "Hey, look at this, you know." Next thing I know, somehow it shifted. Now, instead of looking at the UFO in a book, I was standing outside, and there it was, the same thing, and it was over the house. And I thought, well, that's weird. And I remember the people that were standing next to me, we got really kind of, I don't know what happened to them, but they ran inside the house. I thought maybe they're going to go get cameras or something. But anyway, I just stood there, and I started talking to this thing, and I said, "Hey, you know, I can see you. I can see you quite clearly, whoever you are." Next thing I know, a smaller craft comes out of the larger UFO, and it landed in the backyard, which really got my attention, and a man stepped out. He just looked like a normal human being. I mean, he had some sort of suit on, but and we started talking in the garden, and he says to me, he goes, "Did you know that all these plants and trees are all connected through the earth energetically?" And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "Really?" And I said, "Yes, sure." And he goes, "Well, most people in your world don't know that." And I said, "Yeah, well, you know, I've been studying this for a while." And it was that kind of a conversation that I was having uh-huh. with him. But it reminds me of what you saw. Clearly you saw that. They tried to explain this a little bit, I think, metaphorically in the movie Avatar. They were showing us that all life is connected by an energetic web, and it communicates. And it's supposed to at its highest potential. Everything is supposed to nurture everything else. It works in harmony. And that's one of the things that we've lost. I really think that's the whole concept of sin. Is not so much one act; it's a series of actions that we've taken or agreed to turn our backs to the Creator and to the true purpose. Like you said, Poconoke, it literally means the garden is seen from above. And this is a beautiful garden planet, but all of us collectively, really, to one degree or another, have done to this world. It's horrible, but we could turn it around, and that's the main reason what I was saying before about I find it one of the things I was really fascinated by Jameel when she was talking about how her mother was a star traveler, and that she inherited this show and a lot of wonderful things from her mother, and the title Alchemy of Light, it really caught my attention. Because that's what alchemy is. It's not a mystery of mixing one chemical with another, but this information has been just hidden for thousands of years on this world, but it's starting to finally come out again. And that is that for people who are interested, is that alchemy actually is the condensation of light, energy, consciousness, which are all the same thing. And it's condensed down to a very small, they call it a philosopher's stone. But it's not a stone. Yeah. It's just condensed light, energy, consciousness. And that it's at a very, very high frequency, very high vibratory rate. So when you expose other things to it, the best analogy I think I have is an opera singer or somebody who's a very good trained vocalist, they sing that certain frequency of a note, and the glass in front of them will shatter. It's because it's picking up the frequency and it's starting to resonate at the higher frequency until it just can't handle it anymore, and boom, it breaks.
Well, that's what's happening with the Earth. When I describe the amoeba, is there'll be a vibration that will be felt by everybody. And there'll be two sets. There'll be a lower one and a higher one. And the result is the Earth will divide just as amoeba does divide. And one will go in one direction and one will continue on in the manner that it has. But once that Earth, the higher one, leaves the vicinity of this Earth and its atmosphere, it'll acquire a cloud that is being developed now in our solar system. And that cloud will surround the Earth and become as the sun. And then what this new Earth will be known as is a wandering planet. It'll be wandering throughout the universe for all time, but it'll always have its own sun wrapped around it. And the polarity between the two will feed one another as it lives off the total energy of the creator, or the intelligent living energy is what will provide the means of life, sustaining life.
I know certain people have talked about this in the metaphysical community recently, but let's just try and be more specific. In my opinion, what's being talked about here is that the Earth, when it separates, it literally is like when you play a note, there's an octave above and an octave below. So the choice is being made now by all souls that are here is, do they want to move up an octave, or do they want to descend down an octave? And those two things are going to be mutually exclusive to each other. In other words, this planet is in discord. There isn't truly the vibrational frequencies here are not in harmony. So they need to separate.
Yes.
Because it's a violation of the laws of creation. So at some point in the near future here, what we're talking about is people choosing, some of us are choosing to move to a higher frequency, and others will choose to remain on, or move to an even lower frequency on, like, let's just call it the old Earth, as opposed to the new Earth that will literally be in a higher, some people call them dimensions, but I don't know if that's actually the right word. It's just a higher vibratory rate. And it will be in harmony with creation. So there will be a lot of more light. There will be a lot more love and compassion and cooperation. And, a lot of the negativity, if not all of the negativity, will simply fall away for those of us that move into that, that go with the new Earth. it will literally be like heaven on earth. It's one step closer to what my understanding of heaven is.
Yes, on this earth, if everything that we have has a limit to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can travel so far north, and you're going to wind up south.
And,
no matter what you do, there's a limit to what we have. The speed of sound has a limit. The
right.
speed of light, they claim, has a limit. What will happen within this new earth is that there will be no limits.
Mm.
The limits will only be those we wish to and have imposed.
But I see.
It'll be only for that individual. You won't impose your will against another person. You can't make a limit and have it affect another person in the new world, because that's an infringement of right.
Yeah, and free will has to be honored. I agree. Okay.
Yeah, and it already has been honored, because those people have already been selected to be of a higher vibrational nature, will achieve that higher vibration. And that means letting go of all the silly things that we do here upon the earth that are so destructive, and half the time we don't realize what we're doing.
Well, yes, unfortunately. And as I was saying earlier, I really think part of the problem is because of these covert entities that have been living with us for thousands of years, manipulating us behind the scenes. I mean, manipulating our leaders and all the various government,
powers.
Religion. Yeah, I forget the exact word for these. I'm sorry. I'm drawing a blank on that word. But, you know, government or religion, those structures.
Institutions.
Institutions, thank you. Those institutions are corrupt, in my opinion, from the core. And we see this happening, the way that they're ruling against the will of the people and against the betterment of mankind. It's pretty obvious. I think in the Bible it says you'll know them by their fruits, which meaning, you know,
yes.
by their work that they do, not by the words that they say, because you cannot trust these politicians. Every time they open their mouth, practically they're lying, and it's evident by their deeds. So
did you know, Robert, that
yeah.
Speaking of politicians, that the colony of Massachusetts forbade any attorney or lawyer from setting foot in their colony? They were to be excluded from them, because the founding fathers of the colony of Massachusetts knew the effect it would have upon the legal and legislative systems that were about to be instituted here in the United States.
Mm.
They knew that lawyers, for example, would be a matter of corruption, a corruption to the point of where to be a Supreme Court justice, I think you have to be an attorney. You can't be a regular citizen.
Right.
A jury no longer comprises the people taken at will out of the community from which you live in, but rather a judge is set as an attorney that's there to represent you is an attorney. It was never supposed to be that way. Your jury was supposed to be among your peers. And
right.
they were the ones that were supposed to have the power, not the judge.
Yeah.
But the manner in which we've taken something that was beautifully presented originally and has been distorted to the extent that I feel that we need a new form of government. It doesn't mean that we have to destroy the one that we're living in.
Right.
For that whatsoever. But I am for transforming the government of the United States so that the people themselves have the power, and that they use the power in a rightful manner, which means a re-education of the people to know what their effect is when they take any course of action for 2 to 3 choices on the future of their actions,
mm-hmm.
so that the responsibility can be for, say, 2 to 3 generations later, looking at what had taken place and know the reason why they had done something. Right now, the problem with the governance is that no one is held accountable. It seems to me that regardless of who the elected official is, because they are politicians, they have to have a means of talking politically, which is a polite way of saying they can say something and have it interpreted any way they want later on in the future.
Yeah.
And that's not proper. That's deception. That's the work of the devil. The devil is the one that was supposed to originate that deception. Well, that's not the God that I worship. And that's not the government that I wish to fall in line with. However, in the Lord's Prayer, when it says, thy kingdom come,
right.
I wonder what people really do think about what that is. And if they think that it's going to be a long way off, they have another thought coming because it's rapidly approaching.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming, or I should
rightfully,
say...
Rightfully, mercifully.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a long time since we've actually had the kingdom of God here on this world because as you said, the fallen angels, I call them demonic extraterrestrials,
mm-hmm.
And this is what took me. It took me 6 years to fully understand that that's really what's going on in Washington, D.C. You know, it started with the pictures of UFOs swarming over the Capitol in 2002 on July 16th. And I wonder, I just couldn't understand how that could be going on and nobody seemed to care. And so that was the catalyst that brought me into it. But after studying it for 6 years and reporting on it nationally and internationally, it wasn't until I was coming to the conclusion of the second book and I discovered that the movie The Exorcist was actually based on a true story of a boy, a 13-year-old boy there in Washington, D.C. And then it threw me back all the way to 1985 when actually the 13-year-old boy had happened in 1949, okay, sorry. But I recalled what happened with the same thing, a demonic entity in Malibu in 1985. So it all came full circle for me. And I recognized, oh, my God, the politicians in Washington, D.C. are probably possessed to some degree. I found that that there is actually, it's open knowledge that there is a demon living in the Capitol. And nobody seems to be concerned about it. They treat it like it's just a ghost story, but it's not a ghost. They call it a demon. They call it the demon cat, and they've nicknamed it DC, appropriately. And people have seen it mainly in the sub-basement of the Capitol. And typically it starts off looking like a small, regular house cat with red glowing eyes. And as it approaches the individual, it grows to the size of like a tiger. And then it usually leaps at them and vanishes into thin air and usually gives these people such a fright they pass out. But it also has left footprints, they say, in the marble floor and the wall. So this isn't normal, okay? It's not the ghost of a cat. It also usually only shows up just before, like, a president is assassinated or 9/11 occurs or something. So, again, I would have to say this thing knows. It definitely knows what's going on in the country. It's probably steering the minds and actions of so-called elected representatives. And this cannot go on like this. I mean, it just cannot. We cannot simply just go, oh, yeah, that. It's unacceptable, and especially for somebody like myself and yourself who knows these things exist and that they're doing what they're doing. I mean, even John McCain was running around saying, jokingly, of course, he said, I'm doing the Lord's work in Satan's city. And I thought, mm-hmm. Well, what a weird thing to say. But it came at a time, again, when I was writing the conclusion of the second book, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C. I did not want to write this conclusion. The way it came out about that there's demons in Washington, D.C., extraterrestrial entities that we simply call demonic, that they're running Washington, D.C., that they set it up to serve the dark side,
We in Polkinokit have some very much the same. We call them shapeshifters.
Uh-huh.
And if you think about the Egyptians, how many of their goddess or goddesses were
mm-hmm.
actually very destructive, but always had the head of some different type of an animal, including
right.
a cat?
So right.
it's the way the human mind perceives the demon that makes it whatever it is that you're looking at and observing. So I find it quite probable that those things are more real than is not real.
Yeah, they're extremely real, and that's the problem.
The alchemy of light is great because if you use light in an alchemic way, It is the most powerful instrument that any human being could ever use.
Well, and that's why
what the angels use. I mean, and referring to the angels of light using light.
Right, not the angels of darkness. Yeah, and that's why the demons have kept this information hidden from us, at punishable by death. If you were dare to bring this information out in the not-so-distant past, I mean, it really, up until recently, it was extremely dangerous. Maybe it still is. I don't know. Personally, I don't care, because I have a feeling that, you know, we are in the cusp of this great transformation, and the information needs to come out. People need to wake up. As many of us need to wake up as possible before the great transition occurs.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why I dare to speak about this stuff, and actually have been speaking to some extent, you know, to the best of my ability publicly. I've been reporting on this kind of stuff since 1991, but it didn't really get intense for me until 2005, in the summer of 2005, when I first broke the story of the UFOs being photographed over Washington, D.C., I got visited by a black helicopter at my home. And during the middle of the afternoon, it was extremely disturbing to see something like that. Clearly, they knew exactly what they were doing, and it was intimidating. And I suppose that they thought they were going to stop me, or at least give me something to consider that I should be not doing what I'm doing. But as far as I know, I'm not breaking any laws, and they've never charged me with anything. I guess they feel threatened by the fact that I would dare to tell the truth to the public. You know, it's kind of odd. But look, here's the thing. The reason I even mention it is because a lot of people have said, you know, put pressure on the government. Even just recently, there's a petition out there that got over 5,000 signatures that says, you know, we the people want the government to disclose what they know about extraterrestrials. Well, first of all, I don't think you should be asking the government. I really don't think we are going to get a straight answer from the government, because especially if they're involved with demonic extraterrestrials, that's the main reason they're not telling us, and because they're culpable. You know what I mean? They've created some sort of pact. They're in cahoots with these guys.
But the good news
they is admit.
They have a time stamp on their forehead right now.
Mm.
They will be welcome upon this earth until a particular time, and the time is very, very close. It's a matter of days. And they will have to leave this earth, because the earth itself is larger, more powerful, and is a living entity.
Right.
They have abused what they thought was dead, inanimate, meaning nothing, and has no power over them.
Mm-hmm.
Little do they know that our mother, the earth, is more powerful than all of them that are put upon this earth.
Hmm.
And the power that it has is so great that it allowed itself to be expelled from the sun itself, and the creation of our earth.
Hmm.
And when the Great Spirit said, let there be light, there was light. Until then, there was no light. But the sun was still the sun, still orbiting there, but in darkness.
Hmm.
And the light on the sun, if the scientists were to wake up, they'd find out that it could not possibly come from nuclear fission or fusion.
Mm-hmm.
It would have blown itself out. That it's a different form of energy. In fact, I have a friend of mine right now that's asking me to use light as light. There's 36 different modalities that I've been trained in healing. Sound and light just happen to be two of them. He's asking me to use radio frequencies for the ablation, which is destroying of cancer by heat. And I've decided that the best way to go is to ignore everything that's on the internet, because most of it is too slanted, and in working, it's not an overall cure.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas using light from three different directions upon a human being can turn around, not only find the cancer, but also can turn around and change the structure of the cancer so that it would cauterize the blood vessels that go to the cancer, and would also turn around through heat ablation, turn around and destroy the cancerous cells.
Hmm.
It only has to go to about 110 degrees for a very short period of time. But with the cancellation of light, you can also extract the heat out from the good tissues.
Hmm.
So all you need to know is that person's pH level in that general area right there, and you know the salinity level, and you can turn around and protect the living cells from the cancerous cells. And walk into a room in a matter of 4 to 5 minutes, you should be able to walk out and not have cancer.
Well, you know, and I'm sure people are saying...
And this was done by a person, by the way, that had died, I think, 10 or 12 years ago. And he went so far, and then he had stopped what he was doing and then been asked by someone else to pick it up and continue it. I think I will, but not on the same manner that this person had worked in, because it's not natural to me.
Yeah, well, so I think some people are probably thinking, no, that's impossible. But I've read from other sources, yeah, there's a one-minute cure for cancer. I think there's a lot of, I've always felt in this life, and it's no secret, I'm 51 years old now, but I do believe that we are not living up to our true potential as yet. Mm-hmm. We are on the cusp of a beginning to awaken to our true potential, so that where there isn't any more war or disease or hunger or suffering. I mean, it sounds like nirvana. It sounds like utopia. But I don't think it'll be quite that way. I think there's still going to be a lot of challenges ahead of us to overcome, to deal with, you know. But it's a matter of perspective, you know. Mm-hmm. You can either look at it as a problem or an opportunity to create a solution. So,
well, I believe alchemy by light,
yes,
can actually turn around and supply the food and everything that is needed. There's a person in India that lives strictly by sunning himself.
Right. Well, he says there's a goddess that gives him, that he every day he somehow visualizes or makes a higher connection with the goddess.
Yes, it's a higher connection
to something.
I call it intelligent living energy.
There's
many names for it.
Sure.
But I'm self-learned. The only time I went to college was to take courses that I thought I needed and usually quit halfway through because I found out I didn't need them. Well, it's the same way. This person has found his way to connect to the intelligent living energy. And this is what I'm trying to do in my own way. And I think in our own way, that's what all of us are trying to do. And if we do it together, it can be so much easier.
Right, right, and more rewarding too, because it's just so much better to be able to share these things with others. I mean, I really think that's the way God intended it. And we're here together. I mean, I know we're all individuals, and we should celebrate and honor our unique qualities, mm-hmm. but we're part of a collective consciousness. And that's one of the things that will unlock our true potential. And for example, if we hadn't been committing war on each other for the last 100 years, if we instead had put our minds to solving other problems, like let's just say cancer or, taking and turning all the deserts into gardens, we could have done it. We easily could have done a lot more here. Not to mention what we could have done traveling to the moon and Mars or wherever. I mean, at some point, and I really think, too, from what I've my understanding about the situation is, it's one of the reasons that the good guys stepped in now when they did, meaning the good extraterrestrials and the interdimensionals, mm-hmm. the angels. Because if we were to continue down this road as a collective on this world, it would become not only a problem for this world, but it would spread to other worlds. We would ultimately be used as the tools of destruction for other worlds or on other worlds. And that's unacceptable. So,
yes, we'd be too willing to be slaves that would be used for very evil purposes and would get to enjoy being evil, because the nature of us right now is not so much to be good. We're actually afraid to do something that God commanded. He told us to love our neighbors as we love ourselves.
Yeah.
How many people are willing to turn around and knock on their neighbor's door and say, look, I'd like to give you an apple pie?
Mm-hmm.
And then how many neighbors would accept that apple pie and wonder, what did he
eat? Is it poison or what?
What's he doing for this? This is out of place. No one does that anymore.
Well, you know, part of the problem, Don, is when if you turn on the news, any given time of any day now, all they're projecting, reflecting to our mind is that it's a terrible world. You know, you would think, It's a terrible world. And yet, if you really stop watching the news for a while and you drive around or you walk around your neighborhood, you don't see that stuff.
No.
I mean, typically, you don't see half of the, not even half of the nonsense you see on television every day isn't happening. There's an ancient text in Egypt from called the Nag Hammadi. It's a Gnostic text. And they talk about this legion of a hierarchical legion of extraterrestrials that came here thousands of years ago, invaded this world, and covertly set it up so that they could pull the wool over our eyes, basically create an illusion and force us to live in, sort of like the movie The Matrix, we live in this illusion and suffer because of that illusion or delusional state of mind. There's a guy, David Wilcock, has been saying we're basically all hypnotized to some degree or another. So obviously, some of us have woken up and broken the spell and can see clearly what's going on. So,
And those that don't exhibit a tremendous amount of fear, and this is what they live off, is fear.
Right.
They're so convoluted in their thinking that they can't stand before the light.
Right.
They want no use for anything that is of light, of truth, and of beauty. Their idea is to absorb, much like a cancerous cell that has started out. And part of the problem of the humanists is that we have a mind, it's called the subconscious mind, and we're not using it.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're going into an area, or the earth is moving, and what you'll find is on television more and more good things being talked about, not as for half of the program, but a little bit to ease the tension of the world because they know how bad it's getting out there. What is happening is that the subconscious mind is starting to meld or starting to work with the conscious mind because of the area we live in. So people are going to start judging one another. They're going to have to stop this. And they will stop judging one another. But they will judge themselves. And they'll find themselves wanting. Then they have to do something about it. Their subconscious mind absolutely will not allow them to continue living, doing harm to other people. And it is because of the subconscious mind that will be put back into operation. It's like evolution. A lot of people think that evolution is, if I need to need another finger, I'll grow a finger.
Yeah.
Well, if evolution is that case of providing something because of a need being supply the answer to it, then why do we have a subconscious mind? It isn't for the animalistic part of the body. The subconscious mind was originally meant to be activated with the conscious mind and both to work in unison with one another. The imagination that we have is flown synergistically from one portion of the brain to another portion of the brain with no neurons or anything to transmit what that degree of imagination is. But that degree of imagination comes from the subconscious mind. And the mind is not part of the brain.
Right.
People think that mind is part of the brain. Well, it isn't. The subconscious mind isn't part of the brain either.
No.
But when both are married together and are working properly, then humans will become as the creatures we were designed as, which is godlike in nature. We
right.
will be made then in the image that we were supposed to be created into. And again, the greatest help of instituting that and helping that to come along in the near future will be discoveries made in the alchemy using light. And that is a very firm prediction that I'd say will be happening within the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you speak about the conscious mind, for me, I'm drawing an analogy from researcher David Wilcock. He said that the soul is a true entity, like a ball of light that exists in a higher frequency plane above the earth, so like a satellite. And he said it's beaming its light energy consciousness down to your body to animate your body. And it's having a physical experience, even though it's not a physical thing. It's experiencing through the vehicle that is the body. So the conscious mind, you might say, is that part of the beam of light that comes down and is actually here. The subconscious mind is the part that is closer to the actual source or soul that's at that higher frequency. And as I said, when I when I did the meditation in 1985, what I was looking for was I'd seen something evil. I'd actually experienced something evil, and I wanted to confirmation. I wanted to affirm that there really was still light or love in the universe. And so when I sat on top of the mountain and I actually stood between the earth, the sun, and the moon that night, and I looked up at the Milky Way, and I actually projected a thought. I was actually doing the Om exercise when I was, you know, using that as a signal. And I projected on top of that signal, I put out my thought, which was just love. That was the only thing I was thinking. I was projecting love out there because I figured if there's love, I mean, if there's any loving entities out there, it will reciprocate. I mean, again, it was just an exercise. I just knew that I had to do something because I felt horrible about what had happened, and I didn't know how to proceed. I really didn't know what to do. And so I meditated and put out that signal. So I guess it really shouldn't have been such a surprise when I laid down. You know how sometimes when you're falling asleep, you feel yourself like falling? And you jerk yourself awake. What that really is your soul, the energy that is your soul or consciousness here is starting to retract up that beam. And it's actually starting to ascend away from the body. And that's where you get that falling feeling from. Okay, but this time I didn't fight it at all. When it happened, I was very tired. I was actually laying on cement, of all things. But I felt like I was floating on a cloud. I mean, I just literally just floated right out of my body. Mm-hmm. But I was still completely awake. I hadn't fallen asleep. And the odd thing was, everything started getting so bright. And even though it was a full moon, I know it wasn't the moon because my face was shielded by this this pillar that I was laying on, you know, a column, whatever. And so, I mean, I was just marveling at this sensation and the light and everything. And then for this being, somebody came up to me, I was like, actually, I was kind of startled at first. I didn't know who it was. And I was sort of on guard, like, oh, my God, what, you know, who's that? And that's when he said to me, I'm your father. And I was like, what? You know, I mean, seriously, I had no idea what he was talking about because he didn't look like my father, not my biological father. And so, again, I'm just repeating this because I want people to understand that we are not just physical beings, that we are literally, when it says we're created in the image of God, I believe that what that meant was just talking about our souls are these spheres of light, intelligent. Like you said, it's an intelligent living energy that has an individual, unique personality, but it was created as part of a collective holographic fractal. And so we are all connected. We're not only related, we're all connected back to the original source mind, the creator. And we're part of creation, but, you know, until we realize that side of ourselves, we haven't begun to unlock the potential, you know, that we have, that were the gifts that we were given by the Creator.
Right, and when we're given a particular gift by the Creator, we will live to use that gift. Mm. Otherwise, He wouldn't give it to us.
Right.
And I've had that experience in, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, where I was attacked, and one of the things happened was that I had what they call syncope, which means that my heart stopped. There was no pulse, there was no blood pressure, there was nothing.
Mm.
Everything was cease and desist for about 5 minutes. My wife's a registered nurse. She checked my pulse and everything, called the 911, and about 10 minutes later they had arrived there. But I knew during that period of time that I was protected by that which has been protecting me all my life. So I felt safe and secure. I did go into a state of complete unconsciousness where nothing existed for a while. Hmm. But then I came back into the light, And I knew that I was being worked upon by people of the light.
Mm-hmm.
And what they had done through, again, light alchemy, was they had inserted an energy light into the middle of my chest that burnt like heck. And I didn't appreciate it, but they were saying something about they were changing the DNA on me.
Wow.
And I said, yeah, that's nice. Can you do it a little more gentle?
Mm.
And then that was it. The next thing you knew, I was back within my body. It was like I slammed back in my body just like mm-hmm. You would leave it as a shaman and then come back. And I was back in this world. But I knew that I had been attacked by something that was not supposed to attack me, and the consequences thereof.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I guess that's a signal to leave.
That's somebody trying to call you, isn't it?
I guess that couldn't be. Yeah.
Yeah, so we still have a little bit of time if you're willing to stick on the line.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So I want to go back to a little bit of what happened. I still don't know consciously what happened when I fully, when I ascended into the light and met the Father. But and oddly enough, the next day, first thing I did was go back to the boy's house, and I spoke to his grandparents, and I said, look, I'm sorry what happened, but I got to tell you something. I said, you can heal the scars on his face, but unless you do something to heal the scars on his soul, this will happen again. And I didn't stick around to explain myself. I walked out of there, and it was very, very, you know, that was a very strange thing for me to do. Okay, it wasn't in character, and I actually could have got fired for doing it because I was a security guard at the time. But I was so compelled to deliver that message, and I believe that came from the Father. He showed me
God within.
He
expressing what needed to be expressed, and he was using you.
He was guiding me, just as he's still guiding me, because I allow for that. I recognize he has much more wisdom and knowledge than I do, and I freely ask for it. But as a means of confirmation, so I didn't think I was going insane. Later that day, a friend of my girlfriend, she showed up at the beach, and she was talking to me, and she says she was really excited. I mean, this was a very materialistic girl. She had nothing to do. She had no awareness of spirituality. She thought that was for stupid people or whatever. She says to me, I saw you last night. You came to me in a dream, and you taught me how to fly. I'm like, what? You know, I mean, I hadn't told her anything of what had happened. She was just giving me a message. Now I'm like, well, what do we do? And she says, well, it was like Peter Pan. You came there, you took me by the hand, and we flew out the window, and you took me up to the mountains. I'm like, really? Mountains? And she's like, yeah. You were trying to teach me, and then she says, you wanted me to do it by myself, and I wasn't getting it. She says, I don't know what that meant, but she says, I just couldn't do it. She says, and you got mad at me and put me in a shopping cart and started just pushing me down the hill. And then she says, and then she got mad, because she thought that was kind of silly, and she jumped up out of the cart and started flying. on her own. And she said it was the most amazing feeling, and she says, but I stuck with her. I followed her back to her home to make sure she was safe, and then and that was the end of it. And she says, you know, I've read about this in psychology class. This has something to do with spirituality. I'm like, okay, you know, whatever you say. Because I didn't want to tell her what had happened to me. I didn't want her to tell my girlfriend that I was going nuts, you know, because I really couldn't explain it, honestly. But that was one confirmation. And then a few hours later, I went home, and I was the phone was ringing. As I got home, I ran in there, and I grabbed the phone. It was my grandmother. The complete polar opposite of this other girl I just described, in that she was a very spiritual woman. She had survived a lot of trauma growing up. She'd had her back broken as a child, and had to go through some horrible surgeries just to be able to walk. And they told her she would never live past a certain age and have kids. She lived to be like 70-something. She had three healthy daughters. And she attributed all that to her faith in Christ, or I should say, she claimed that he'd been in her life somehow, you know, healing her. Okay, I'm not going to argue with it, whatever. But she said to me, she called me up, and she had said, I saw you last night at the foot of my bed. And I said, oh, really? And she's like, yeah, and you were glowing. She said, there was these sparkles of light all around you, and you were telling me something, and she says, I can't remember what it was. But she says, I just had to call and tell you that you know, I saw you, and it was just the most beautiful thing. And she said, that was a weird dream. And I said, sure. You know, I mean, again, I didn't want to explain to her what was going on because I didn't even know. But those are two people that were simply confirming to me that after meeting the Father, that I, in my higher self, my light body, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. my soul self, I literally was visiting people. I'm also pretty sure I went and visited the boy and looked in on him and saw really what was going on and had a better understanding of, you know, how to help him and his family. And sort of, not just for him, but for myself, to understand the real problem that we're facing, all of us have been facing here on this world for so long. Mm-hmm. It was that was a tough lesson to learn.
But you kept with it.
That's the important thing.
I had an experience similar to that.
Yeah.
And I went to a Stepping Stone Ranch. I normally don't perform a marriage for people, but this couple insisted that I did because it was a last resort that they had, and nothing seemed to work. So I mm-hmm. said, well, I'll try something. But so I went through the process, and when we got there, it was raining. And asked the people to gather around. I said, I'm going to perform a ceremony as it was told to me by my grandfather. Mm-hmm. So I started with the ceremony, and it involved the use of a blanket because we didn't have any bear skin to use. And I asked them to please hold on to this, but before I do, I need to call the spirit guides. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I heard a few snickers there, but it didn't change my determination or anything of what I know, because this was my reality, not theirs. They came to see something. It was to be shown to them. So I called upon an animal ally to make itself known to this couple that was to be married. I told them, in a little while, you're going to hear the sound of an animal pretty loud, and don't be frightened by it. But that's the animal that will be your ally. As your ally, if you ever have trouble, call upon this ally, and this ally will provide a means of taking all the energy that is hiding everything, the deception and the illusions, out of your life so you can look at the problem properly as humans and find the proper solution, if there is a solution to be made and when it is to be made. Mm. And then all of a sudden, a loud croaking noise started. And there's about 35, 40 people there. And they all jumped. They were frightened. They couldn't. I told you there would be a loud noise. And this is the noise. And one of them decided he was going to find where it was coming from. Well, they searched this on Stepping Stone Ranch. It's a little brook that goes across there mm-hmm. By the road. And sure enough, they couldn't find it. But they searched at least a half an hour. I said, you know, I'd like to continue on with this. This is more important than finding a spirit frog. You can't find a spirit frog. It's a spirit. Do you understand what a spirit is? I said, please. You know, you're only going to become further upset. Don't be obsessed by it. This is a Native American thing. It's accepted and common. So please, enjoy yourself. Mm. So we turned around and started, and then I asked for the God of nature to make itself known to them. And what happened was, and was witnessed by this group of people that were there at the Stepping Stone Ranch, that the rain stopped and the sun opened up. But the only place that it shone was on the two that were there. It didn't shine upon me, didn't shine upon any of the other people that were there. Mm. But the two people I placed upon the rock there where I performed the ceremony, that's where the light was.
Wow.
And it still rained. Everyone was still getting wet, but for whatever reason, they were illumined. So we continued on with the ceremony. There was quite a few different things that had taken place that showed that the spiritualness of the earth and its animals and its plants and of the water, that it's a live, living entity. It's not dead. It's something that can be communicated with because it's something that I communicate with. If I can communicate with something and get an answer about mathematics, about chemistry, about physics, out of a tree or out of an insect, then they have to have intelligence. They have to have a consciousness, just as we do. And if they have answers to things like that, it makes me wonder, you know, what am I doing? I should be the one that should be the servant to them. I should be going out every day to water them and to put a sun shade over their head or whatever it may happen to be to show love and support toward their life.
Hi, I'm just saying we're almost to the end of the hour.
Okay. Thank you, Doug. I'm going to wrap it up now. Real quick, Don, though, you know what? I was thinking, you know, it's one something I also want to mention is, yes, the Philosopher's Stone, someday I do believe we will not be consuming animals and plants and things in order to survive. And that will be a wonderful thing at that point. We can literally, like you were saying about the individual in India, we can literally draw our sustenance directly from the Creator without having to kill anything.
Well, this is something that I've been working on and will continue to work on for whatever time I'm here.
Okay.
See this come to fruition.
Yep, and it's coming soon. So, well, thanks again for sharing your thoughts, and I look forward to seeing you again soon. And everybody who's tuned in today, I really hope you enjoyed this particular show. The Alchemy of Light is a wonderful gift. Thank you, Jamil, and thanks again, Don, for coming on with me today.
Yes, and I thank Jamil also.
Okay, well, this has been Alchemy of Light, and I'm your guest host this afternoon with Robert Stanley, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you, everyone.